We can leverage the power of technology for efficiency, affordability, immediate access, safety, all these kinds of things that are important for families. At the same time, have the human touch.
Welcome to the Women on the Move podcast from JPMorgan Chase. I'm Sam Saperstein. Women on the Move is a global initiative designed to empower female employees, clients, and consumers to build their careers, grow their businesses, and improve their financial health. Each episode will feature successful and inspiring women who are breaking the mold. They're sharing their career journeys and leadership lessons, talking about their professional and personal goals, and making a difference in the lives of others. This season, I'm taking you to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where I caught up with many of the women who inspire me every day. In today's episode, I'm introducing you to a serial entrepreneur who took her own challenging experiences with caregiving and created a company to address the issue for herself and millions of others. Sheila Lirio-Marcello founded Care.com, a thriving online platform which now serves millions of families and caregivers around the world. She recently launched another company called Landit, which is an online career management platform. In this episode, Sheila and I will discuss her experience launching Care.com, the economic impact of caregiving, and how we can improve the lives of caregivers themselves. I hope you enjoy the conversation. So Sheila, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sam,
it's
for having me.
It's great to see you here in Davos.
Exciting.
So you are the founder of Care.com.
Yes.
And I really want to get into this story. And
sure.
I really want to start with, why did you start the company and what led you to do this? A personal story behind this.
I was born and raised in the Philippines and I came here for college and then got pregnant. It was not part of the plan. I got pregnant between my sophomore and junior year. I now have a 28-year-old enjoying empty nesting. But the time, a struggle. And Ryan, our older son, was really the inspiration. Because what I found, not having my parents live in this country, in the United States, that is, and my husband's parents were deceased, we didn't really have a lot of access to care.
Right.
And yet we were pursuing our careers. And so we completed undergrad, went through grad school, went through our careers, and didn't have great access. And so where were we going to go? Here we were catapulted during that time into the internet space because mm-hmm. that was the hot space to be. Yet we were in technology companies and we were using the yellow pages for care.
To find people to help you.
That's right.
And that's what you had to do with no family around.
Exactly. And so childcare, I think, is really common. But then at 29, I became sandwiched between childcare and senior care. Because fast forward, my father fell backwards carrying our younger son, Adam, up the stairs.
Wow.
He's alive today, but he also suffered a heart attack, and so we had to find care for him.
Wow. Immediately.
And, yes. While being a dual-income family.
Right.
And as you know, Sam, more and more high percentages of dual-income families because we want to increase female participation in the workplace, so
yes.
We really need care.
So that is a very personal reason. So all of a sudden you realize you had to find care quickly, affordable care, high-quality care.
Yes.
And I will tell you, I'm actually a Care.com customer.
Awesome.
I've used it several times for actually childcare and housekeeping services. So I know very well what the platform can offer, which I think is great. When you started the company and you had this great idea and you went out there for funding, what was your funding experience like as a female founder?
I didn't really have a lot of funding experience. I was fortunate enough that I was working in another internet company that I was helping scale. It was the second one I was at. I was employed to really help be the GM and expand it because I had some technology background. And a board member saw my work there and then invited me to join a venture capital firm to be an entrepreneur in residence. Sam, I didn't even know what that meant. But they said, hey, we will pay you to write a business plan and we want to invest in things that you're interested in. And I was very interested in the family healthcare space, something that would help women, since I'm super passionate about that, given my own experience. And so I was fortunate enough that in my first year, we were able to raise about $7.5 million from scratch because
wow.
we didn't have a product built.
This was all based on a vision.
It was based on a vision. And I probably was one of the first few women backed by VCs to really scale companies. And at Matrix, what was exciting is they invited me in to other deals to assess. And after that, they started investing, after Care.com, they started investing in other female-founded companies.
That's great.
So that's really exciting.
Yeah, you seem to be able to open the door then for other women in this space, not only as founders, but maybe also as just the types of businesses that they were starting.
Exactly.
If they were around.
What's challenging is because, as you know, there's just, in the 97% are VCs are still men and all of that. The challenge is their own personal experience. They apply to the products and services that they're interested in. And especially if you're raising an A round, it's sort of a hope and prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You're backing somebody who is either experienced or through your network. And so many women are not overly networked. And so the role modeling, I think, is really important to show that it can scale, because the next phase beyond fundraising is, can you scale a company?
Yes.
Do you have the experience to actually scale it all the way through, and can you take it public? Can you access the capital markets at all the different stages? And so that's also been challenging. And I would say, as much as I can, I try and mentor and pay it forward to other women to say, it's very doable, it's very possible. And so I'm inspired when I see Rent the Runway with Jen and Stitch Fix and so many of these amazing female-founded companies that are now just scaling and just out of this world, which is really awesome.
So during those times where you were writing the business plan, going out and talking to folks, did you encounter questions from investors, potential investors, on the business itself, you know, anything around, do women really need this, or how would that work? What were the tough questions they were giving you?
Yeah, I think that those questions still happen to the businesses that I just mentioned, and the women and the female founders are challenged. Often, I had to remind male VCs to ask their wives and ask the women in their lives if this is relevant, because their immediate is to jump initially, of course, to the business model, which I'm happy to discuss, and it's going to be based on the unit economics and the profitability of each widget or service that is that's created. But in general, unless they personally experience it themselves,
right.
And that's why, for me, I remember at Matrix being invited to other companies like Guilt Group,
mm-hmm.
where I was there in the assessment of the deal, because there are not a lot of women in those rooms. And
right.
of course, that's one that I'm passionate about, is how do we get more female VCs? And I know Eileen Lee and so many others are pursuing that path, which is super exciting.
Yeah, so that will help too, better understand these companies.
Yeah.
So caregiving is such a personal service, of course, and you're bringing technology to help to solve for that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you match technology with such a human endeavor at the end of the day?
That's right. You know, it's interesting, Sam. The common topic now is the fear of machine learning, and that most jobs are going away. We're in a unique space where we can leverage the power of technology for efficiency, affordability, immediate access, safety, all these kinds of things that are important for families. At the same time, have the human touch. I often refer to the importance of AI plus HI, right? And that's the human interface.
Mm.
And that we need to build businesses thinking about that. And also, how do we build businesses for the good as opposed to creating problems?
So how did the platform evolve from, let's say, the first iteration to now in terms of what you know about people, what you know about caregivers, or what you know about the users and their needs?
I think it's important to develop the product listening to consumers. So we launched the product focused on child care, senior care, pet care, and tutoring, because we knew you have a chief household officer, and she often, 95% of the time, has to make all those decisions. And then a couple years later, we added housekeeping, because a mom said to us, many moms said to us, that, listen, after school is really important to me, and that's still care. But when my kids are doing homework, it'd be great if I could get additional help because I'm still working full time, and even helping with meals and all of that. And that's still considered care.
Right.
So the service has really evolved as we thought about adding multiple services. The other place that we're innovating now, and the company's super excited about it, is really moving to on-demand. We bought a company called Trusted last year, based in California. And given the Uber and Airbnb dynamics and the expectation around the power of the mobile phone to have immediate access to anything, there's a desire by users, and especially millennials, to move to on-demand. Now, that's asking for a caregiver to show up at your doorstep, sight unseen, as a babysitter. That's a little
scary, right? It's different than a Lyft or a ride service.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, which is one of the reasons we invested in safety heavily. As we think about marketplaces and the evolution of those marketplaces, especially when it comes to people services, the investment in safety is, I think, critical for the future.
And
And part of the other evolution is really thinking from the get-go that we designed this as a two-sided marketplace. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that the majority of seekers and families, the chief household officer is the mom, and a majority of caregivers, as you know, is mom. It's Care.com is a very female-focused platform. Absolutely. And so what kind of advocacy do we need to do, not only for safety of caregivers and making sure that they can trust the website, but they can get jobs and that they're treated fairly? Years ago, you know, we were one of the first platforms that just said, you can't hire unless it's above minimum wage.
Right.
Because on average, caregivers are paid $10 or $11 an hour, and yet our golf caddies are paid $17 an hour.
Right.
And so how do you create advocacy using the power of the platform as well to really represent women?
And what about to providing guidelines for people starting out around contracts or asking for roles and responsibilities in their job? I mean, you've offered these things to people on the platform, which is really amazing.
And we do. We give a lot of advice. In fact, two of our most popular tools are sort of what we call the calculator, the babysitter calculator. And so people want to know, what's the going rate?
Mm-hmm.
What's the right way to pay? And then when holidays come around, what's the right amount to tip?
Yes. Everybody would love to know that.
Right. And what we've decided from the founding of the company is, how do we professionalize care? Because if, in fact, you don't focus on professionalizing care, then we won't have the people there
the right
for
people doing
our loved
it.
Ones.
Right. I think that's such an amazingly important piece of it. It's not just helping women who need the care in the home to also do their professional careers and endeavors, but professionalizing the caregiver role itself.
That's right.
So how can we do that better? How can we all do a better job of that?
Absolutely. So part of the vision and design of the company, in 2012, we acquired a company called Breedlove & Associates, which is now called HomePay. And so we facilitate and teach families to have access to pay above board, ensure that they're getting workers' compensation, that they get benefits.
So making it a more professional job.
Exactly. And at the same time, we also integrated platforms that provided access to healthcare. We even launched Benefit Bucks, which there's a percentage of transactions that if you decided to pay your babysitter on care.com, we donate a certain percentage, as well as a family would donate, sort of conscious capitalism. And that amount of money we put in a card. Actually, Noah, JP Morgan helped us think through this.
Great.
And we put it in a card, and that card, a caregiver can go from job to job to job in multiple families they can work for, and they could use that card to pay for pharmacy benefits, pay for gas, pay for things in daily living.
That's
just
amazing.
To support them.
That's great. And so now they have a portability almost to a benefit like that, and then the benefit.
Yeah, we called it pooled portability.
Oh, that's
benefits.
Really great.
Yeah.
I've seen some research that you've done with Harvard Business School around caring companies and the notion of caregiving as a serious economic endeavor, which costs a lot, obviously, for people who pursue it. What were you using that research to do and to convey?
Yeah, so part of the reason I'm at Davos is because we launched a business in about 2011 called Care at Work, which actually takes the platform and helps companies be able to provide it as a benefit, either the online service or overall backup care. The really important thing is we start to think about employment is, how do companies think about the ROI of investing in these benefits? And so we worked closely with Joe Fuller at HBS to support anything that they were doing around the measurement of what they called a caring company. And one of the things they found is many companies don't know how to measure or don't even think about measuring the impact on their employees with regards to care. And yet we know at Care.com that one of the key drivers of absenteeism is actually care. Because if it's your loved one, your
sick child,
you're
parent.
Not going to step out the door.
You can't.
I often describe care as similar to roads and bridges in terms of infrastructure. You're going to be less worried about your tax dollars going into potholes and fixing those things if you can't even step out of your home because you don't have great infrastructure for your loved ones.
Right.
And so there's an economic benefit, and I spend quite a bit of time advocating for that, which is the past several years I've been coming to Davos to enlighten leaders around how the importance of care really drives the economy, but because it drives labor and jobs. And I always say care equals jobs.
I was fascinated to look at that research because it does make you think about the care that you need to provide to your own family and that your company really doesn't take a very large role in that.
They don't.
So everything you do, you largely do by yourself, or
That's
you
right.
do it very informally with friends and family or networks, but your company doesn't usually provide that benefit or support. How are companies starting to do more of that now?
I think it's massively changing. I think for a number of years, many companies were setting up daycares at headquarters,
right.
But that's becoming sort of anachronistic in a sense because of remote employees,
right.
The expectation of millennials.
Well, it's also very expensive, and
exactly.
Sometimes it's only backup emergency care.
Exactly. And it's very difficult to, when you have a sick child, and if you're commuting 30 minutes away, to actually put them on the train and put them in the backup care situation.
Right.
You know, so
logistically very hard.
Right. So online actually can serve that because care.com is very ubiquitous. And we serve pretty much I think it's like 97% of the zip codes across the country. So you're able to find the care you need that actually serves your family. And I think more and more companies are seeing that. So what's interesting, Sam, is it's not just the corner office and the corporate executives. What we're seeing is frontline retail. Starbucks now servicing their baristas to provide backup care and care.
That's terrific.
Grocery stores in the Midwest, Myers is doing it now. Best Buy. So I think companies are starting to realize, and I often describe to people, why low-income workers? How is that economic for them? And I said, if you think about it, that's revenue for the company. If you don't have those frontline workers, how are they going to show up to work to actually drive the growth of the company?
Right.
So the way to think about care is not its actual cost driver. It actually is a growth driver.
As an investment.
Yeah.
I think that's great. So you've also founded something called Land It.
Yes.
To boost diversity in the workplace.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What is the organization actually focused on?
Yeah, my co-founder, Lisa Skeet Tatum, and I had this shared vision, and we came to it in a different paths around our experiences, but she went the corporate path. She became a VC, and you know, I went the entrepreneur path. But something is common that we both experience is the question that says there's a pipeline problem, and why is it in the, you know, up in the corner office, we continue to be in
we
sort of
the
single-digit
candidates
percentages. And that, I remember chief executives that I would meet with or CHROs or diversity officers will ask me and say, well, you know, I get care is an important pillar to advance women, but we're having pipeline problems too. And I said, well, that's a different business.
Right.
And so that's where Lisa and I co-founded this company. And Landed is really focused on personal coaching that's 24/7 accessible, a personal branding, and really helping women build their confidence, assess their competencies, teach them negotiation skills. Because sometimes when we lack confidence, we don't want to be vulnerable and ask for help of our direct managers who we feel are going to judge us.
Right, right.
And so Land It has just been successful. It's helping a lot of corporations now. So it's nice. And Land It and Care.com have a special relationship that,
right.
Of course, was independently decided on, right? Because, of course, I'm CEO of a public company, but it excites me that there's a natural fit between the two.
Absolutely. I mean, you're thinking about your home life at the same time you are your professional
yes.
life.
Yeah.
And so how do individuals use Land It? Do they use it through company sponsorships or
yeah.
they can't use it themselves
That's
if they
right.
want to directly?
Just like Care at Work is that benefit is provided.
Yeah.
And then this specific on coaching is provided by the company.
So with all of these ventures that you've had, this
yeah.
is so unbelievable. You've started many, you've
yeah.
acquired many. Who has helped you along the way? Who are some of your mentors?
I've had incredible mentors along the way that are both male and female. And I think what's hard is, I think as a woman, I feel it's an obligation to pay it forward to other women. I was fortunate enough that I had many men because, again, there are a few percentages of women who were senior enough to actually help coach with the scaling. And so that started with the VC firms and the partners and the VC firms that just continue to believe in me. Tony Florens, for example, in NEA, who was raised by his mom and grandma, and he was, I think, covered by Forbes as being one of the top VCs that support women, and I was one of the first that he actually invested in.
Oh, so you know personally.
So,
yeah.
And I think, if I recall, in sort of that Midas Touch list, he's 30% of his investments go towards female founders now.
That is great.
That is massive. And
wow,
he considers it a competitive advantage.
I'm sure.
So mentors in my life that have really entered in my Filipino American community, I've had one other Filipino-American take company public. There's two of us, really.
That is a very small universe.
It's a very small
How
universe.
How do we get that to grow?
Which is, we need to coach more.
Yes.
And Dado Banato and his wife, Maria, over Labor Day, the year before we went public, spent, you know, three dinners with my husband and I, sat us down and coached us and said, as you prepare to take the company public, here are the things to think about. How do you teach your children values? How do you stay true to your purpose despite the success. So that is just so special. And so in any way that I develop those strong relationships that I can mentor, I think it just is so important.
So what are some of the challenges that you've had to face? Yeah. What are out there that's on your mind?
I think that gender and being a minority, you know, when you tell that story and you're telling it to friends who are men, often scratch their heads and it's like, really? Why don't you use that as an optimistic advantage point that you have because you're different? The reality is there are challenges. You know, I remember when we were taking the company public and we were traveling around the country, and specifically one of the challenges I faced was I went to go to the bathroom and then I got back to the room and I was offering to give coffee to the investors on the other side. And they, you know, were shaking hands with my CTO, my CFO, and they said, like, hello, and made the introductions. They got to me, and they're like, you must be the assistant from the bank.
Oh, no.
You know, so I have so many of these stories, Sam. Oh. And the thing on the optimism side is I have to often remind myself, because I could respond angry. I have found that responding in a logical, thoughtful way and an intelligent way to their questions, I actually think breaks through bias, because I don't need to salt the wound of the mistake that's already been made and their unconscious bias, right? And so I think they will remember the grace in which I responded to the situation, so that they're reminded the next time it happens to not jump there,
right,
given
right.
whoever is across the table. And so I call this sort of this authentic boldness that we have to do and be respectful in a sense of just being true to who we are, that it can be achieved through optimism rather than the negativity of saying, hey, I'm a woman and so I'm always challenged, as opposed to how do I use that as a strength, sort of the starfish principle, to
yes.
change the next person and the next
yes,
person's attitude.
Yes, they will certainly remember that. But that's really hard to do. It's amazing you can
yeah.
you know, not have that reaction of, I'm the founder and CEO right here. You know, how do you ever use humor to diffuse situations like that?
Oh, I have. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not easy. And I think you just have to remind yourself, understand the context where somebody's coming from. You know, are they fighting for relevance? Are they fighting for understanding because the world is changing in what they naturally know, you know, in the way they were brought up? Or I'm always trying to understand, what is the other person's context? I know mine. And the most that I can do is expose you to my context. Mm. And hopefully that changes how your outlook will be for the next person you meet.
It's a very generous approach. I love that. Thank you so much, Sheila.
Sam,
it's such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything.
Thanks to Sheila for sharing her insights on caregiving and entrepreneurship. As a personal user of Care.com, I found it fascinating to hear the story behind the company. Thank you for joining us today. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. Thank you to our partners at The Female Quotient and Magnet Media for helping us tell these stories. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein.